In the United States, 40% of sex trafficking victims are Black women, while only 13.4% of people, both men and women, identify as Black or African American alone. When we talk about eradicating human trafficking, we know we must address the factors that cause it in the first place, factors that could make people a target for traffickers. Today, we'll discuss race and how racism intersects with human trafficking. As we hop into this conversation, there are two important terms to define that we'll be bringing up a couple of times: racism and implicit bias. Racism is a system of advantage based on race, involving cultural messages, misuse of power, and institutional bias, in addition to the racist beliefs and actions of individuals. An implicit bias is the attitudes or stereotypes that affect our understanding, actions, and decisions in an unconscious manner, activated involuntarily, unconsciously, and without one's awareness or intentional control. There is a lot to unpack today. The more we know about how and why trafficking is facilitated, the better job we can each do at stopping it. Hello, everyone. My name is Helen Hofer, and I am the Freedom Drivers Project Director for Truckers Against Trafficking, or TAT, and the host of Driving Freedom. My co-host today is TAT's Deputy Director and co-founder, Kyla Lanier.
Hi, everyone. As TAT works to educate, equip, empower, and mobilize members of the truck, bus, and energy industries to combat human trafficking as part of their regular jobs, we wanted to create a podcast that would serve as a helpful training tool to one of the largest mobile armies of eyes and ears out there on the road seeking to recognize and report this heinous crime. Today, we are thrilled and honored to have with us Tanya Gould to lead us through this conversation about the intersection of racism and human trafficking. Welcome, Tanya.
Hi, so glad to be here today.
Tanya, can you start off by introducing yourself and let our audience know about your work or experience as it relates to anti-trafficking?
Absolutely. So my name is Tanya Gould, and I have been working in the anti-human trafficking movement since 2012. I started with my own organization called Identifiable Me, and the goal really with that is just to help survivors identify themselves. We're all wanting to be a part of a label, wanting to be seen, you know, am I the prettiest flower in the field? And so in a world that tells you what to be, actually taking the time to recognize who you are, you know, because what I realized with my own story, what happened to me was that I didn't know who I was, and I couldn't answer that question for myself. So my work involves a lot of mentorship, consulting. I am a member of the United States Advisory Council for Human Trafficking. I'm also a board member for Polaris. I am a consultant for the State Department. I help inform organizations on policies and what they're doing as a survivor leader expert. And you need a survivor who's been through what your organization is actually trying to do. I also have a partnership with our local children's hospital, and with that, provide mentorship to kids who've been identified as being trafficked.
Tanya, when I read more about Identifiable Me, you talk about addressing the emotional as well as the mental health for survivors. What does that look like at Identifiable Me?
A lot of times when kids are picked up for being trafficked, having someone with a lived experience to be able to talk to, it's very supportive and it helps connect the dots for kids and their families so that they go appropriately to resources that are lined up for them and go into these resources without a lot of hesitancy, because all of this is new. Also, the other thing that's a huge piece, not only is time needed, meaning we need time to process, time to think this through, mental health is huge. You know, it's a piece that we cannot overlook. And so to be able to walk through this gap, to be able to be in that space is gorgeous.
Yeah, I have volunteered with kids in foster care. And what I see over and over again is the changes in behavior when they have consistent mental health support really changes someone's success and then all these other areas of life. So Tanya, thinking of how much more likely are people of color to experience previous life trauma before ever being trafficked? And so how is that setting someone up to be more vulnerable? What does it look like? What does that have to do with racism? And how much does this come up in your conversations with survivors?
I'm able to just come in there with many things unsaid because we know this culturally. Whereas if a white person were to come in and say, we want to set you up for counseling, You know, there's all these things that are there that doesn't feel relatable to the Black girl, right? So because we have these cultural norms, I get to tap into those things with saying it kind of briefly. So now that I'm saying it as a person with lived experience and a couple of things that they've experienced in their lives, no, this is necessary for your healing and for your wholeness. And I know this hasn't happened this way before, but support is different now, right? And so our team, everyone gets it. I think it's just important for people to think about, you know, it's not necessarily about fighting racism, but understanding it, right? For an example, when our country, you know, was developed, it was developed with white people, specifically men, in mind, right? So these are men sitting around the table and coming up with a plan for the future of the country, not with Black people in mind or people of color in mind, as far as, you know, having the same playing field, holding the same space. And so moving forward, we continue to have these systems that were created with a different mindset, because each culture is different. Each culture comes to the table with a different set of experiences and perspectives. And so as these systems continue to play out, whether it's education or the working class or just laws and policy, things are coming up back in the day, hundreds of years ago, you know, for different reasons that they're coming up with now. We haven't adjusted law and policy quickly enough, right? So they're still the same systems that are in place. As we move along, it would make sense that there are some things that really need to change, and we can, you know, work on this together. It's up to us to understand how the system works. And if we are playing into the system, because if we're playing it into the system, we keep it going as it is.
Someone once described this as like, oh, all of the systems work. The systems aren't broken. They work the way they were built to work, which is in favor of the people who initially built them.
How does the justice system treat prostituted people, specifically
that
people of color?
Really hard, because most of the girls that have been in these situations, when they're picked up, they're taken to a locked facility. They're taken to detention centers. It's hard to explain. They go to detention centers because you don't want them out in the street, because they'll get shot or killed because of the violence. And when we talked earlier about the systems that are set up are run by people who's not a part of our story. So there's just a lot of things that are inconsistent and doesn't line up. And so because we see this when we're going for programs that are out there, we just feel like it's not for us, right? Even though it may be even created for us, but it still doesn't feel right because no one asked us. These are people who think they know what we want because it's their system.
And right. I mean, if you have never seen an example of someone who looks like you doing something, receiving care, getting the higher education as a doctor or works as a lawyer or is the president of a company, if you don't see more and more of these examples, it is harder to visualize yourself in that position because you're not seeing those images, seeing those examples. And so can you talk about how important is it to have survivor-informed care and culturally informed care for people of color to address these issues specifically to the experiences of survivors and survivors of color? Could you potentially give us a specific example of what this could look like when it comes to looking for jobs or maybe higher education or a spiritual community?
Right. So when we talk about jobs, it's like really commendable for a Black person to be in entertainment. As long as we stay there, no one's going to mess with us. We're good. That's what it feels like to us when we're looking at players of sports, you know, in games, basketball, football, whatever. And, you know, what Black boy doesn't want that? And we see the rappers with all the money, right? So what Black boy does not want quick money? Because it's different. He doesn't see his life like the young white boy who watched his parents go to college, or, you know, the young Black boy watched his parents do something else. Dad is not even home. You know, my uncle pimped out girls, made a lot of cash. What girl doesn't want to help her man make a lot of cash? Because now she's his ride or die. Those things are things that are, it's celebrated in the Black community. So why would it be wrong thinking for us to prostitute. My buyers were white men. And so it was my job to entertain them. So these are the thinking, the things that we have in our mind that we know it's not okay, but the world hasn't told me something different. And so in this world of performance, we can perform well. So when it comes to trafficking, those who are buyers, it would be wonderful if you understood that concept, the concept of making money off of the rich man.
So we've talked about issues that make people of color more vulnerable to trafficking and systems that create barriers to services. How about the implicit bias and how a Black person, a Black body, especially a Black woman's body, has been viewed? I remember you shared before about the powerful story of Sarah Bartman from the 1700s and 1800s. Could you share that with our listeners? And what are some of the takeaways today from that historical example?
It's on Wikipedia. Sarah Bartman. Bartman was considered a freak of nature. For extra pay, one could even poke her with a stick or a finger. Sarah Bartman's organs, genitalia, and buttocks were thought to be evidence of her sexual privatism and intellectual equality with that of an orangutan. It's a freak show because it was something that wasn't understood. And this is the interesting thing that reminds me of our culture again and what we see played out. She was owned by a Black man. You know, so it was a Black man exploiting her to white people. She was set on the stage in London. When we look at her and how a Black man used her, he definitely played into it. That to me, it's an easy see or easy look into what's still happening today, you know, and it's happening to other races as well. But it's always about, if you look at who's the dominant and who's the one oppressing. If someone's listening to this and they're buying sex currently, right? Think about it. Why is this person saying it's okay for you to buy me? Do you think that person really wants to be in that position where you're paying her money to have sex with them? Is that fair? Do I still need to feel powerful? Is that why I'm buying women? I have rule over something or someone. Those are things that I think buyers and tricks, that's what I think they need to think about. Why do I need to do this? Who told me that I was a man, and how do I know I am one, and what should a man be? You think your boy has become a man because he's had sex? Because I think a man should protect the vulnerable, not subdue them, not be the oppressor of the vulnerable. I think that's how you know you're a man.
And you bring up kind of coming back to your conversation at the start about identity. Right? Is that there's so much link to then what is our identity and where are we seeking our own affirmations? And that drives us, right, as people. And how is fighting racism inextricably linked to combating human trafficking? And therefore, how do we address this?
Understanding what racism is and understanding that now is not the time to attack anyone. It's really about the time to, you know, like we're doing today, having the conversation and understanding that it's about doing work for others. We need to really look back at our history and understand the root causes and ask about the why in order for us to continue to move forward and not deny it. We can't, you know, continue to be like, oh, I don't want to talk about that. That happened way back then. Because to do that is to say that there aren't repercussions from that, or that it's not just because we don't agree with each other, because most of us do. And so when we're looking at our history, we have to be able to understand our future. And here, you know, we have to look at the choices that we're making in our daily lives. Like, for example, what movies are you watching? What platforms are you subscribed to on the internet? Is it keeping your ideas recycling to your kids and to your grandkids? Understanding what you find yourself doing daily, who are your friends, what are you allowing to happen around you? Holding each other accountable, that's the message, right? Saying something. Don't let just the oppressed be the ones to say something. You see the things that are happening, you say something, because it's not okay with you. It's not okay to be in your space. And so you get to choose that yourself. And so, yeah.
So, Tanya, you're talking to a former U.S. history teacher here, and what this brings to mind, you've brought up some historical things And when we think about history, history informs the present. I always told my students, you know, what we studied in this chapter is going to cause the next chapter. It's all together. There's implications, there's consequences for those things. There's also attitudes and there's biases that come with our history, whether we have felt the sting of it, whether we have dished it out, whether we have implicitly just absorbed messages that we didn't do anything actively to get them. We just absorbed them. We understood them to be true. And now, you know, it's our job to challenge them and that we start to break down those ideas and recognize first and foremost, this is a victim of a crime. This is a highly traumatized person and that I need to see that person. And so I ask this next question, our last question, because we want to bring it back to the professional drivers and the truck stop employees that are going to be listening to this podcast. What can they do when they see a potential victim at any of the locations that they might be at? What can they do? How can they interact? Like, what should be their first step if a notion comes in their mind? Oh, she looks high. He's queer or transgender. Whatever that stereotype is or whatever that historical bit is in their mind, what are some great practical advice for drivers and truck stop employees?
That question is beautiful. And I can't help but to think of this amazing truck driver that I met when I was in that experience. And he was a regular. So every time we would go to this particular truck stop, I would hope that he was there because he was so extraordinary. This truck driver, he never paid for sex. He still gave me money. The first time he said to me, "Baby, I know you're tired. Just come on in here and I'm going to drive and you can go to sleep and I'll bring you back." It was so, it just reminded me that someone cared about my well-being. It was that simple. I would say that that was one of a series of events that began to, you know, set itself in place for me. So when it was time for me to go, I had the courage, right? So it was a simple act of kindness, right? So it could be anything. It could be, "Hey, are you thirsty? Do you need anything?" You know, we're all human. You have gut instincts, acting on a gut instinct that you know to be right. Like, don't deny yourself of that. So that's the first thing, you know, seeing people for just people with basic needs, understanding that people have a backstory. People are where they are because of something or someone else, or because of a mindset, because of their vulnerabilities. I believe that no one comes to the earth, you know, comes to this planet and not have challenges. Everyone has challenges, and some people hide their challenges better than others. That's all. So recognizing that you have had to go through some tough things in life and now just pay it forward. Here's someone who's having a tough time for whatever reason, but still seeing them as someone, as a person, even though, you know, we're here and we're talking about Black communities, we're talking about people of color. The truth is we're all on this planet. So we're Earthians, humans, whatever you want to call us. We're talking about the same people that are on the same planet, and we're only divided by the different parts of land. The water divides us. And it would be great if that was our only division amongst us, you know, but that we truly saw each other as human beings.
Tanya, thank you so much. You have given us some powerful tools to use as we individually and as a TAC community combat the systems that allow trafficking to happen, including racism. Thank you for leading this important conversation. I'm glad that we could even just begin this conversation around racism and how it intersects with human trafficking. As we combat human trafficking, we combat systems that for generations have had devastating effects on those in our cities, our towns, our communities. And we have the opportunity to take steps against that. And remember, if you see anyone involved in commercial sex, no matter what age, race, gender, sexual orientation, or other descriptor, call the hotline number 1-888-373-7888. So if that individual is able to leave, they are actually given that opportunity to leave that life. And if you see pimp control or a minor, call 911 immediately. Say you see human trafficking to get that immediate response and then call the hotline. If you would like more information about the topics we covered on the show today, check out the show notes on our website for more information and go to our website for Truckers Against Trafficking training materials. It takes all of these actions that may feel big or small to put an end to the exploitation of vulnerabilities. This month is National Human Trafficking Awareness Month. TAT has a number of education sessions and events going on nationally virtually this month. So go ahead and check all of that out on the TAT Facebook page for more information. And last but not least, thank you to the real Truckers Against Trafficking, because these calls, these actions really are driving freedom.